Local Matters brings you incredible stories about Indiana original businesses making a positive impact in Indiana and the entrepreneurs leading the way. I'm Mel McMahon, and today we will get the story of how Ted Gregorick started T. Gregorick AV Consulting, an audiovisual integration company. We'll talk about the challenges and the successes along the way and why supporting local businesses really matters.
You're listening to Local Matters, brought to you by Indiana Originals, leading local living.
So I was in a drum corps, and the lady that ran the drum corps could never get my name right.
Yeah.
And we're doing the big finale, marching backwards, and I've got these giant drums strapped to my body. And we're marching backwards doing this big finale.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Stop!" And she could never, she called me Ted, she called me Greg, and she called me Rick, and she could never get it straight. She stops and she goes, "Is your name Ted, Greg, or Rick?" I said, "Yes." And her head exploded. And everybody laughed, and she had no idea why everybody was laughing at her.
That is perfect. That's perfect. I kind of want to start the podcast with that story.
Okay.
Can we just go jump into it?
Yeah.
That's like the perfect way to start this podcast. I was going to welcome you,
yeah.
do this whole formal thing, but no, that's a great way of doing it. So Ted Gregorick of T. Gregorick AV Consulting, welcome to Local Matters.
Well, thank you.
How was that? Did I say
that's
your name
great,
right?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm glad to be here.
It's so good to see you. I feel like I start almost every episode like that because it's been so long since we've just seen our people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I used to see you every day.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd haven't. It's you know, everybody's been sequestered.
It has definitely been something, you know, that we've never really experienced before. Good things have come out of it. You know, I've learned a lot about. You know, my likes and dislikes and how to be more flexible. And but I also have learned that I really am a people person and I really need to see
I miss
people.
Hugging people. I
Me
really
too.
Do. It's like the minute I get vaccinated, anybody else that's been vaccinated is getting hugged, whether I know them or not.
Right. There you go. I know. I've told people my friend Susan Decker, she makes T-shirts. We have lots of Indian original companies that make T-shirts. And I'm like, who wants to make me a T-shirt that warns people that I'm a hugger? Because as soon as we're allowed to do that, I'm all in. I'm all in for sure. But your company has been able to really, I hate the word pivot, but that's kind of the word.
Exactly
it's the buzzword.
That's exactly what we did.
You've been able to do that through all of this.
Well, I had a week in March of, oh, expletive deleted, what am I going to do?
March 2020.
Because everything we had a bunch of stuff scheduled. And it all canceled because everything got locked down.
So for people who aren't familiar with your company, explain what you do exactly.
Well, that's the thing. I do. There's a lot of stuff we do. I'm primarily a sound engineer. I'm an old roadie. I've toured with Van Halen and Pat Benatar and Billy Joel and a European lady you've never heard of that sold more records than the Beatles and Rolling Stones put together. And so, but when my kids were little, I needed to get off the road. And I started doing installations, primarily installing sound systems in churches and schools. We expanded to video and lighting over the years. And then I did that for a long time. And then I got roped into doing the broadcast engineer for the Colts for NFL radio. And that's how I got into radio. And then I did that for a season. And then I got an opportunity to go out and be a video engineer for Toby Keith. And I went and did that, and then I came back and got back into radio, and I did that. You know, you and I worked at Emmis for, you know, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then that came to an end through no fault of my own, and I went back in. I just jumped back into doing installations. But I also, I mean, I own a PA system, so I go out and do live events with my PA system. And but, you know, with 2020, you know, my primary clients were churches and schools.
Okay.
So, you know, that all closed down. We also do a fair amount of remote broadcasting. So I'm a freelance broadcast engineer still, and I was doing a lot of that. And so all of that canceled in 2020. I mean, you know, the churches and schools closed down. So what wound up happening is that we pivoted and figured out remote broadcasting on a whole new level. And so we got a contract that went from the last week of March up through, you know, end of November. And I was in there 40 hours a week producing radio shows for a national network over, you know, for all year, and it really saved me. So I came out of 2020 reasonably unscathed.
So in a nutshell, you make sure people sound good.
Right.
Whether that's a radio broadcast, it could be a network broadcast, it could be, now you're into video too, right?
Right. I just pulled the trigger on a video system that's nearly 100% wireless. And I can do a full 4-camera shoot, and the whole system fits in one small carry-on luggage case.
Which, if you listening, if you have seen a studio before, seen all the equipment it entails, that's incredible tech.
Yeah, I did a lot of research, and this system's like the only thing that does what it does the way it does it. And you've seen it, and mm-hmm. it will fit in one carry-on case, the whole thing.
Well, and you know, as much as we want to get through this and go back to normal, the reality is, you know, social distancing is still going to be really comfortable for a lot of people. They're not going to want to be, you know, right on top of each other at, you know, an 8-person table kind of thing. We are going to need to spread out, and we are going to need to still broadcast things to a virtual audience and an in-person audience at the same time. And that's what your equipment allows you to do, right?
Yeah. And we can go set up in a conference room, and it streams directly to the internet. So I would go to your conference room and I would set up, but this thing takes half an hour to set up. I'm not sending 6 guys with a truck and cable trunks and power distribution and tripods and big cameras and wire running everywhere. That's, you know,
how long does that usually take?
That takes
a day,
a couple hours. You know, that takes several hours to do that. And like I said, I can come in, set up in 30 minutes, and depending on the audio needs are what become big,
mm-hmm.
because the video part of it is just tiny. But you know, depending on how much audio I need, I can, you know, mic up to a full orchestra if you want. But we come in and set up 30 minutes, shoot for an hour. Gone in 10. You know, it's like it takes no time or effort to do this anymore, and I can show up, and so we can have your people at your conference table and have a 4-camera shoot and shove the whole thing down Zoom or whatever, and you know, Teams, Facebook, YouTube, whatever your format is, and at 1080p.
Well, and there's a lot of technical challenges too with, you know, using Zoom for everything. You know, if you have two computers next to each other that are both trying to use Zoom, you can't have both microphones on at the same time, right?
You
know, there's challenges that we've worked through during all of this. And Ted, one of the things I love is, you know, I can tell how kind of geeked out you are about this technology.
It's like, it is.
You
it's like
absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's and like I said, I was primarily an audio engineer, and I mean, I know enough about video to be dangerous. I mean, I've been a camera operator. I've mm-hmm. been a video engineer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how to do that. But it's just this doing everything nearly wirelessly is just and for it to be as steady and works all the time. The only thing I haven't tested out is how far away I can get with it yet. I haven't tried to. I need to, like, you know, run out the front door and go see how far I can get before it quits working.
But yeah.
It's pretty far.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ted, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I'm a drummer, and my wife and I have a band we play in once in a while for fun.
The Rents. You can talk about them.
We're always on the radiothon over up at Sullivan's for the Salvation Army. I think that's the first time you and I really worked together was on that.
At Radiothon?
Yeah.
Other than all the stuff I made you fix for me at the radio station.
That's my first real memory of you was doing the first Radiothon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a drummer, and I wanted to be a drummer. And my dad and I went – my dad was an automotive engineer, and he wanted me to go be an engineer. And I got down to IU, and I was in the music education program
mm-hmm.
and to be a music teacher. I discovered they had an audio technology program down there, and my dad was like, that made him happy because I was going to be an audio engineer, and
that's
more acceptable. Well, and the other thing, you know, being in the back end on the the technology side and the production side, you can have a career for your entire life as opposed to try and be a rock star and you get your 10 minutes of fame. And I was just reading some statistics this morning about how, you know, less than 1% of musicians, you know, get anywhere, really.
Wow.
You know, so it's like, you know, so I'm glad I did it. And I got, and I'm the first person to graduate with a degree in audio technology from Indiana University.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the very first person to walk out of there with that degree. It was brand new.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it was a really hard day for me. There was a day when I realized I was a much better engineer than I was a drummer.
Ooh, tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I was playing with a band down there, and I was, you know, but I'd wake up in the middle of the night and think of new ways to patch gear together and have to write them down. And I started going out and running sound, and I was like, I'm really good at this, and I'm an okay drummer.
What was that like, though, to have kind of that wake-up call, right? Because we have it in our heads what we're going to be, and then sometimes we just stumble upon something, what we're meant to do.
Right, yeah. It just, I don't know, it just seemed to, it's, what was it? It's like runners that'll run in the forest at night and not hit tree, you know? Gate of power. And audio became my gate of power. People would watch me, when I was a monitor engineer, I'd have, like, you know, 38 speakers on stage and 12 mixes and 10 musicians and a rock star, and something would start to feed back, and I've got this, I had a rack that was 4 feet tall, full of Graphic EQs. There was 12 of them, and I would reach over and just hit one, and each Graphic EQ had 32 faders on it.
Okay.
And I would, without looking, I would just reach over and grab one fader and pull it down and make it stop, the feedback go away. And somebody looked at me one day and goes, how do you do that? How did you know to do that? And I went, I don't know. It's just instinctive at this point.
Yeah.
And when I got to that point, it just became instinctive. I knew that was what I had to do.
So how do you go from wanting to be a drummer to working with bands like Van Halen and Billy Joel, Pat Benatar?
Well,
how do you get there?
So when I realized I wanted to be an engineer, not a drummer, so I went and I was worked for, there's several sound companies around town here that I went and worked for, and there's a kind of an interesting chain of events that went from working for this little sound company here in town, and I ran sound for Dottie West over at some little podunk town over by Terre Haute.
Okay.
And her son, Carrie, was her sound engineer. And he and I got to talking, and there's one thing that's really important here. I never went anywhere without a resume. I had one, not a business card. I had a resume with me 24/7.
Okay.
If I left the house, I had a resume. It might be in the car. I might have to run out the car and get it, but I had one. And I gave him a resume because he said, hey, man, there's this band that I've been working with. And I don't have time to mess with them. And that sounds like it's right up your alley. They were a heavy metal band. And I was like, you know, I had hair standing up like a rooster. And it was the 80s, you know. And, you know, I looked like a reject from Judas Priest, you know.
Okay.
And so I give him a resume. And I don't know, a couple weeks later, I get a call from this English guy. And he interviews me over the phone. And he goes, and he asked me if I had any convictions. And I said, well, like, you mean religious? And he was asking if I'd, like, been convicted. And
been in jail or
right,
something.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So, and he just laughed. Anyway, so I went down and met with these people. And I wound up going to Nashville and working with this heavy metal band down there. We were supposed to go to Florida and do some club dates and then go into the studio in Tampa and record an album. So I went with them, and I was living at my uncle's house. I got an uncle down in Tampa or in Orlando. So I went down there and worked with this band, and we did some shows. And the day we were supposed to go into the studio and start the album, the management company jerked their deal out from underneath them.
Oh, wow.
Stranded me in Florida, and I stayed down there, and I wound up, I met some people, and Van Halen was doing their first 1988, their first Monsters of Rock show. The very first show was in Tampa.
Uh-huh.
So I got it. You know, I called and they said, hey, we need people for the load-in, so we want you to come over for this a day and do a load-in. Well, this load-in lasted like, I was there for 11 days.
Oh, my gosh.
And all I had
for
was...
For one show.
For, well, yeah. And
wow.
Because this was the first time the stage had ever been built.
Yep.
So they're building the stage for the first time, and that took forever. And this stage was like, it was bigger than any stage had ever... Like, this whole tour, everything was bigger than anything that had ever been out before. I mean, the tour was the biggest tour that had ever gone out at Van Halen's Monsters of Rock in 88. So it was Van Halen, Scorpions, Dokken, Metallica, Kingdom Come.
Wow.
Okay.
That's an incredible lineup.
Yeah. So anyway, so I go over there thinking I'm going to be there for one day. I've got one change of clothes.
Was everything black?
No. So I go over there and I had a friend in Tampa that I'd run into. We were on that club tour and I ran into her on the club tour and she goes, Ted. I go, Julie. And we're like, And so, you know, and then so I said, hey, I need a place to crash for a night. Okay, sure. So I went over and crashed with her. And so I wind up being stuck there for 11 days. So I would go work and I would come home back to her place and I would take my clothes off and put the one pair of clean clothes I had on and wash the dirty ones. And every night I would come home and just rotate clothes and sleep in the ones I was going to wear the next day because that's all I had. And so anyway, I think I went out and bought a toothbrush and some, you know.
Well, yeah, if you weren't expecting to be there, you didn't have anything.
Right, yeah. So anyway, so we do this load in. We do the show, load out. The show's over at midnight. It's 8 in the morning. The stagehands are supposed, there was like, you know, 100 stagehands there, like what I was.
Yeah.
And they've all vanished. Me and the sound crew chief are loading the rigging truck. The sound rigging truck, all the hardware you used to hang the PA in the air. We had 80,000 pounds of PA hanging over people's heads off of the downstage edge of this stage.
So picture yourself going to a concert. Remember when we used to do that? And you look at the stage setup and you look up. And there's so much equipment that goes into the lighting and the sound. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? And, all of the structure.
Yeah, right. And this, like I said, this stage structure was bigger than anyone that had ever been built before for an outdoor stage. And it would hold more weight than any building in the country. It was designed to flex 7 inches in the middle under full load. And under the full load we had it only flexed 4 inches. So we had another we didn't even have it loaded to its max. And we'd hung more than anything that had ever been hung before. So anyway, so we're at that last night, and me and the sound crew chief, and he's the, like, crusty old, you know, he'd get up first thing in the morning and grab a bottle of vodka and go, mouthwash.
Oh, geez.
And
we've all known those people, though.
And anyway, so... He and I, at 8 o'clock in the morning, were loading the rigging truck. And he, good job, kid. And I go, can I give you a resume? Because I had my resume
out. You had your resume.
I had borrowed my uncle's van. And so I ran out to the van again. I ran back in. I chased him down. I handed it to him. And he just looked at it and wadded it up and stuck it in his pocket. And we were there for like 4 more days tearing that stage down. Mm-hmm. And I finally get home to my aunt and uncle's house, and my aunt said, somebody called for you. I went, who was it? She goes, I don't know. She said, they'll call back at 10 in the morning. And I went, my aunt is a North Carolina hillbilly.
Okay.
She's just, I mean, my mom and her family are all, and this was my mom's brother's wife, but they were, you know, from Brevard, North Carolina. So anyway, this guy that called was Scottish, and she didn't understand a word he said.
Oh, goodness.
He had a real thick brogue accent. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so...
So she couldn't take the message because she didn't know what the message was.
Right. He just know he wanted to talk to me, and because I must have written the phone number at my aunt and uncle's house on the resume, because the one that was back here in Indiana, I wasn't there. So I sat by the phone at like 10:15, the phone rings, and he says... There's a plane ticket waiting for you at the airport. Go get on a plane. Go to Philadelphia. You're a monster of rock. And I got...
I got goosebumps just hearing that. Hired
on the fourth largest sound company on the planet at the time.
Ted, that is an incredible opportunity. Right. What was going through your mind when you heard this?
Here's the other thing. My wife now had been my girlfriend back then.
Okay.
And
at some point in time,
I told her I was 25, mm-hmm. and I said, if I'm not doing Van Halen at Market Square Arena, because that was before, you know, that's what was the venue at
yes,
the time.
Yes.
By the time I'm 30, I'll quit and go to electronic school and fix VCRs and stuff. And mm-hmm. she says, okay, I can live with that. Well, at 27, I go out with Van Halen and we wind up playing the Hoosier Dome.
Wow. You did it, Ted.
Yeah. So,
are you going to cry right now?
I might, yeah. I cry at dog food commercials.
I might cry for you. Okay. Like, this is just an incredible dream come true.
Right, yeah. So I'm like, and then so I...
It's okay. You can take a minute if you need to just...
What happened was, your nose is turning
a little red. You've got some watery eyes there.
I go through and do the Van Halen tour, and I'm just a cable maggot. I'm hanging speakers, plugging speakers in, stacking subwoofers under the stage and plugging them in. Miking the putting the microphones out. That's all I do. Okay, so the crew chief that hired me is also the crew chief and production manager for Pat Benatar. So when Van Halen's mm-hmm. over, we go do Pat Benatar. And mm-hmm. again, I start out just a cable maggot. Okay, well, Patty hadn't toured for 5 years. She took five years off to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the Wide Awake in Dreamland tour. So this is the fall of 88 going into Christmas. So I go out and I'm just a cable maggot. And she doesn't have a wireless mic. So she's got a 100-foot cable and I got to keep her from getting... my job was to keep her from getting tangled up. So I'm squat down by the corner of the stage mm-hmm. paging her cable. Anyway, so monitor engineer number one isn't doing very well. Patty's dying. What? Patty didn't use floor wedges like you used to see.
What's a floor wedge?
A floor wedge is a speaker that's facing up at the singer so that they can hear themselves.
Yes.
Well, she just used two big speakers on either side of the stage for mm-hmm. side fills. And she had been playing arenas and was used to hearing herself in 60 PA cabinets in a giant
filling
arena.
Filling up a giant
right. So she
space.
Could hear herself, right? Mm-hmm. 5 years goes by. We're playing proscenium theaters. And so we're behind the wall, mm-hmm. the front of the stage wall. So we're behind that, and the PA's in front of it. She can't really hear the PA anymore. So somebody got this brilliant idea to put a bunch of reverb in her side fills so she'll feel like it's a big room. Well, she's out there, and she hasn't performed a 90-minute set in 5 years. And so we go through a few weeks of the show, and they figure it's the monitor engineer, and they fire him. And they get a new guy come out. The new guy was Guns N' Roses' house engineer. Now, he came out. He did a little better, but she's still not making it through a show. And he gets a call from Axel, and Axel says, hey, we're going to New Zealand. Get on a plane. And he's like, well, I'm out of here. See you, bye. The third guy supposed to come out got agoraphobia and wouldn't leave his house. So I'm sitting there. I set up and did sound check that day, and I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm looking at the crew chief. Where is this guy? Ah, he'll be here, kid. Don't worry about it. Ah. Well, 20 minutes before showtime, he goes, get in there and mix, kid.
And just throws you to the wolves.
Throws me in. Well, in my lifetime, I've had what I call moments of clarity, and this was one of them.
Uh-huh.
I turned the reverb off. I was a monitor engineer. I knew how to. I mean, my very first monitor gig was Charlie Pride up at Lafayette.
Okay.
That's the very first time I ever ran monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks over me and he goes, walks on stage, starts a song, finishes the song, looks over me and goes, sounds great. Don't touch nothing. And I went,
All right, there you go.
So I turn the reverb off, and I just turn Patty up really loud in the side fills. And they're stereo, so as she moved to one side, I would turn that side down and turn the other side up. So it was...
So you were moving with her.
I was working with her. Yeah, right. And so we get through the show. I'm tearing down, and we're short a guy because I got to tear down the monitor rig and all the stuff I used to do. Hey, they want to see you in the dressing room, kid. So I go to the dressing room.
What is your feeling when you hear
that?
Well,
I'm like...
Are you freaking out?
Yeah.
Like you think you're going to get fired or
I don't know. I'm scared, okay? So I go in and Neil Gerardo, Patty's husband, the guitar player, points at a chair and says, sit down. And this chair's pointing back towards the entire band. So they're all sitting in a big semicircle, and I'm across from them pointing, looking right at the whole band. So I got, you know, Myron Grumbacher, the drummer, Patty, Neil, the bass player, and I'm going to forget his name, and we had two background singers in the band. You know, so it was like keyboard players, so like seven people. And Neil looks at me and goes, why haven't you been doing this from the beginning? I said, nobody asked me.
Because you were just the cable maggot.
I said, nobody asked me. He goes, fair enough. I said, I got to go tear down. He goes, okay, go on. And I became a first call monitor engineer in my second tour, which never happens.
Wow.
So I jumped and went to the head of the class. Then when my daughter was born and she's like 2 and a half and I'm getting ready to go out and do something, and daddy, please don't go. And she's crying. I'm like, I can't take this. And my buddy called me and offered me Bruce Springsteen. And they were going out for 3 years. And I said, man, my daughter will be 5 before I get home. I can't do it. And I turned it down. And I turned down Ringo Starr, too.
Coming up, the challenges and successes Ted has had along the way and what he wants you to know about starting your own business. This is Local Matters.
Hi, I'm Lance.
And I'm Mel.
In the spring of 2012, we were walking around downtown Indianapolis. We were looking for someplace local for dinner. We threw out a restaurant name and Mel asked,
is it local?
That simple question became a much bigger conversation and our company, Indiana Originals, was born.
Every Indiana Originals member is certified local. That means the business is an Indiana-owned and operated company, headquartered here and not part of an out-of-state chain. When you discover and support a business on our website or on our app, you are keeping more money in Indiana, helping our communities be unique, and creating jobs.
If you spent 5% more on goods and services from Indiana, we would have $1.8 billion more dollars for our schools and infrastructure. So when you break it down, that's just $35 per household per week. When you see the Indiana Originals badge, you know you are supporting local Indiana businesses.
Download our app powered by B&W Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Drains, and get your business certified local at IndianaOriginals.com. Indiana Originals, leading local living.
Hello, listeners of Local Matters. This is McFarling Foods, and you know, 2020 was quite a year. McFarling Foods was there through it all because McFarling Foods is serious about partnership. We are in this together. That's what it's all about. We care about what's best for your business. How can we help? And McFarling Foods is a partner to local, independent restaurants. Because, hey, anyone can sell you food. Wouldn't you rather have a partner? A partner who's invested in this same community. McFarling Foods. We're local. This is our home, too. It's where we live, where we work, and where we raise our families. See, nothing's more important to us than our community and our neighbors right here in central Indiana. Oh, and we are very proud to be an Indiana original. For more about McFarling, go to McFarling.com. That's McFarling.com.
We've been chatting with Ted Gregorick of T. Gregorick AV Consulting, who started doing his business in 1999 after a career as a roadie with some of the largest musical performers in the world, including Van Halen, Billy Joel, Pat Benatar. And after life on the road, Ted even helped install the Dynasphere at the Indianapolis Children's Museum. At the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. And he's worked on projects at the Indiana State Museum. And he's probably worked on something you've heard and you don't even know it. Ted, what has been the hardest part about being a business owner?
The hardest part for me is the paperwork, the business part of it, because that's not my strong suit. That just... bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. That, as a matter of fact, I'm looking to find a part-time bookkeeper right now. Yeah. So if anybody's out there that wants to straighten my QuickBooks out for me, give me a call.
We have a few Indiana Originals referrals for you for that too. Yeah. But what's the most rewarding part though?
Well, doing something like the Dynasphere or the State Museum, because the Dynasphere, you get to, you know, I mean, I had t-shirts printed up said, "We make dinosaurs roar."
Oh, that's adorable.
Because we did. I mean, you know, when those dinosaurs make a noise or they, that was, I put that system in, I designed it and put it in. And then I designed the interface between the audio and the lighting so that it would all run together.
Yeah, it's like when lightning is striking and then you hear
so
the thunder.
You know, when we first fired that up, what was her name? Jennifer, I can't remember her name, but she was the charge of VP of exhibits or something over there. And she was actually said in the Indy Star newspaper, in a quote, she says, "Yeah, when they first turned the system on, you could feel it in your skull." And I tried to get her to say that on tape, and she wouldn't do it. But the gas station across the street, that Shell station, they thought something blew up when we first fired that system up. They made me turn it down, which I was kind of upset about because their test audience, they did it like on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So I've got, you got young mothers with a infant in a stroller and a toddler hanging on to one finger, okay, 2-3-year-old. And they're going through the dinosphere and that thunderstorm kicks up and the kids start crying.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's not your target audience. Your target audience is 8, 9, 10, 12-year-old boys who's playing video games on their father's surround sound system.
Mm-hmm.
So I argued with them that we needed to turn it back up, but they didn't want me.
Is anything ever too loud for you, Ted?
Yes. Believe it or not, I took my daughter to a what was the name of that band? Pop punk band my daughter wanted to see at the Pepsi Coliseum, and it was not only was it brutally loud, but it hurt.
Mm.
See, when I was cutting my teeth as a sound engineer in the nightclubs around here, I was the loudest sound engineer in town, but it didn't hurt when you listened to it.
And, it's not giving you a headache,
right? And so I mean, this was just what my theory is that these young engineers are used to listen. They never listen to music in a space. Mm-hmm. It's in their ear canal.
Yeah.
So they get in a 20,000 seat room with a giant PA and they try to mix it like it's in your ear canal. And that's what I think the problem is.
We actually stopped going to a church because their sound system was too loud.
Right.
I mean, you felt hungover when you left.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can see a difference between, you know, professionals and amateurs at shows too, because, you know, we always have earplugs in.
Yeah.
You know, because we know what that sound can do to your ears. So I always think that's kind of a sign.
It was a long time before I could go to a concert and sit down and enjoy it as a listener, you know, without...
Can you really do that, though?
Yeah,
I mean, aren't you analyzing everything?
Well, if there's something wrong, first of all, everybody around me that knows me looks at me and goes, "What's wrong?" Oh, that one, when the Black Eyed Peas were on the Super Bowl, and it was awful. My phone blew up.
People wanting to know
what is wrong. Why is this so awful? And a funny thing is, I had a buddy that was there there was a country artist that was there too. Keith Urban, and he was there with Keith Urban, and he says it sounded fine in the stadium. It was the broadcast mix that was messed up on that. So anyway,
okay. And there is a difference.
Yeah.
There is a difference between what's being put out on, you know, TV or radio and what you're actually hearing in the building, right? Mm-hmm. We do that with Radiothon a lot. What are we hearing on the stage? What is it sounding like?
Right, because Radiothon, I mix in the building and Rick's out in the RV mixing for radio. So it's two separate mixes, yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's so incredible about what just the normal listener or viewer takes for granted, right? There's a reason those credit reels are so long at the end of movies or shows or...
Especially movies these days with all the CGI stuff. It takes hundreds and hundreds of people to make, 20 seconds of CGI. So,
well, Ted, you've had an incredible career and you have your own business now. You started it in 1999 and you have, evolved as technology's evolved and needs evolved. And what would you tell others that want to start their own business? What do you want them to know?
Do something you love. I mean, it's like I would be doing audio whether if I was a plumber or a carpenter or something. Do something you love. Pick something you like to do. Because, I know people that, got a degree and went and they've been in a job their whole life doing something they really don't care to do. And it wears on you over time. So, and if you're going to be successful, you have to have the passion around what you're doing. Especially if you're doing it for yourself. Because the thing, when you're not working, you're unemployed. That's, you know, for every day you're not working, you're unemployed.
Ted, why does supporting local and being known as an Indiana original matter to you?
You know, I'm gonna go back to something Pat Sullivan told me. He said, you know, even buying stuff at the big box store, you know, for him, you know, hardware store owner, the Lowe's or Home Depot, he says, at least those stores are employing your neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's different levels of it as opposed to, but even, you know, ordering from Amazon's got a big warehouse here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're at least employing people here in the state.
Yeah, but there's different degrees.
Mm-hmm. But I would much rather buy something, you know, because my hobby business is making woodworking, and I make, you know, clocks and lamps and tables and stuff. And I would much rather have something that was crafted locally. The small things I do when I shave in the morning, I use locally crafted soap to shave with. That's just, it's my one little thing. I could go to the store and buy a can of Barbasol, but it's usually my family gives it to me for Father's Day and Christmas and stuff. So, but that's, you know, that's one little thing I can do to keep some local artisan, you know, cause they've got kids they got to feed and put through school, and you know, so it's like, you know, it's more like you got to form a community, and you keep it, the more you can keep your community functional, the better off everyone is.
Well, and I want to call back to something you mentioned just a little bit ago about doing something you love.
Yeah.
Right? Most independent business owners are doing something they love.
Right.
And how much better is the world when people are doing something they love?
Right. It is. Yeah.
And so supporting Indiana Originals members, supporting local.
Right.
You're supporting what people love.
Right.
And to me, I don't know if you've gathered this or not, but love is everything. Right.
Yeah.
Love is a verb.
Right.
Ted, besides IndianaOriginals.com and our app, where do we find out more about you and how do we support your business?
Well, T. Gregory AV Consulting has its own Facebook page. I'm going to put my phone number out.
Yeah.
317-418-4108, and it's on the Facebook page. So I gave up on websites a while ago because it got too clunky for, you know, it just, and I don't sell stuff over the internet. It just, you know, so I gave up on a .com. I had one. See, I started the business, it was All Systems Go. And when I did the Dynasphere and the State Museum and all that stuff, but there's another company in Florida called All Systems Go. So I rebranded a couple years ago as T. Gregorick AV Consulting. Can we talk about my new thing again?
Yeah.
This new video system I've got that's nearly wireless.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for is people that need to keep fresh content on either a web page, your Facebook page, your YouTube channel, Instagram, whatever that is. And so instead of having this six-person video crew come in with road cases full of cable and blah, 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 we come in, two people, do a 3 or 4 camera shoot. We can do playback, video playback, or PowerPoint stuff. We can add that in. And so I'm looking for people that want to just like do a subscription. We come in once a week, every 2 weeks, once a month. We come in, get you some fresh content. We're like there for an hour, maybe. Set up, shoot for an hour. We're out of there in 10 minutes. And that's what kind of this new thing I'm looking into doing is. So it's like, because it's all about content right now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's got to keep fresh content up. And this, and because this system is so streamlined and so small and so portable, I can do it for a whole lot less than what a traditional video crew does it for.
Content is definitely king.
So,
Ted Gregorick, thank you so much for being our guest today on Local Matters, and thank you for doing your part to create healthier, stronger communities and more jobs in Indiana.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here anytime.
And thank you for listening to Local Matters, made possible by Indiana Originals, Indiana.Gifts, and McFarling Foods. It's an honor to bring you incredible stories about Indiana original businesses making a positive impact in Indiana and the entrepreneurs leading the way. Learn more about why local matters at IndianaOriginals.com and on our app powered by B&W Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Drains. I'm Mel McMahon, and until next time, keep supporting local.
Thanks for listening to Local Matters, brought to you by Indiana Originals, distributed by the All Indiana Podcast Network. I'm going back to Indiana. Download the Indiana Originals app, powered by B&W Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Drains, and check out IndianaOriginals.com.